we read in Genesis chapter 1 through to Genesis chapter 2. I would turn to look at the beginnings. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke about how truth is stranger than fiction. That was our springboard, reminding us that fiction arises from the mind of men, while truth is out of the mind of God. And I made reference to the way in which God has done so much that is, to man's mind, unexpected. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why so many have been slow to turn to him, because he does the unexpected. And that takes us out of our comfort zone, as we call it. There are many times when even the believer, professing believer, is happier to settle for the normal for that very same reason. But it is right that we should refresh our minds and our hearts by thinking on the remarkable things that God has done. When I spoke about that, I just sketched a few of the key ones. And my intention, just over a few weeks in the evenings, is to take some of the major points that I had mentioned then and develop them just a little bit further. In order to cultivate expectancy and thanksgiving, too often the normal that we have rolled along with has also meant a failure to appreciate each day for what it is. That each day in itself is a day of God's mercy and grace, which should surprise us if we understand where we are ourselves before God. But what I would do, first of all, is to take you back to creation. Isn't this one of the great surprises of all time? From man's perspective, surely. After all, there were none of us there to think of the idea. It was out of our perception, conception. We couldn't think it up. God did it. God did it out of his mind, his counsel. He did it with no precedent, no model to follow. God's creation. And out of that creation, our focus must be, I believe, especially on man. And that is going to be my main attention this evening. But to get there, I also just want to comment quickly about the whole of creation as well. We read in Genesis chapter 1, at the end of those 6 days, God's conclusion was that all he had done was very good. In verse 31. It meant that there was no fault in it. And still today, when we look at the various creatures, when we look at the balance of the environment, even with turbulence, there is still an immense degree of balance in it. The ways in which life unfolds. I think one of the most remarkable sights is to go through a rainforest of some kind, and there's a fern just unfurling. It's glorious. Life unfolding. Part of God's creation. And the way it's sustained day after day. And truly, as the psalmist said, he said it of man particularly, but it is true of all things that God has made, fearfully and wonderfully. Many of the facets of creation are referred back to in the Psalms and other places. Job, for example. In Job, God raises it himself. He speaks to Job and he says, well, look at these things. And were you around when it happened? Could you have thought of these things? Did you guide God in his thoughts? And so on. He's raising a challenge to a man's position. Who can know these things but the Creator himself? But if you look at these examples, Job, the Psalms, we sang Psalm 19, it's one of the great examples of that. Generally, they are serving the purpose of driving man to look at himself in relation to the God of this creation. And to look at ourselves commonly in order to reassess where we are. And most commonly of all, to humble ourselves when we've been proud and rebellious. See, for all that we do point to the animals and the mountains and the elements, and the Bible does that often, that we can see God, we should be able to hear testimony of God, even in the stars that we can't hear, but yet they speak of God. Psalm 19 is saying. And we point to these things, and we should, and we can, and we can. So consider the God who made them. The vastness of the cosmos. Get men thinking about God. But all the time to grasp the Bible's relative weight that it gives to these things in relation to the weight it gives to man. Created, yes, but man as a distinct part of that creation. There in chapter 1 of Genesis, verse 26, we see God saying, "Let us make man in our image." And he takes some time to talk over this and to speak to man when he has made him. Far more than he's dwelt on any of the other things. From the making of man, there in verse 26, the issues and the joys and the conflicts and the dilemmas throughout Scripture, they're all to do with man before his God. And so when I speak of creation, I must do so as I perceive the Bible to do it, which is especially with respect to man. And I would do this this evening, our special focus, man made first in the image of God and then made with a freedom of will. These are two things under that concept of the surprises that God springs, and he does this in his creation, his making of man, in the image of God and with freedom of will. Man made in the image of God. If the created cosmos is astonishing, we cannot reach to the heights of the heavens. If it's astonishing, reading it in, as it comes in Genesis chapter 1, at least it has fallen into a pattern. God said, and it was so, for 5 days. And even for the beginning of day 6. But if anyone had been around, and by this time was lulled into some kind of complacency, this is the way God does things, God says, and it was so, day 6 produces something stunning from the mind of God. Man was the result of divine consultation and divine intention to make man in our own image. The systematic theologians will tell you that here is a good sign of the Trinity, that there's multiplicity within the single Godhead. There is conversation, there is consultation. But see what God is saying here. We're going to make man in our own image. He's chosen to make something with great glory in itself. Yes, reflecting God can only be that. It must be on the foundation of God. But it is still a great honor that is done to man. We're going to finish our service singing Psalm 8. What is man that you should think of him? You set him higher than the angels in his work. You've done all this. You've committed so much to him because he is made in God's image. There's that wonder of the physical construction of the earth and the elements and these creatures. And that is shared by man. He is still a creature. But there is that addition of the breath of life, and man became a living being. This bears the meaning that man lives in a way that is distinctive. Yes, it's still using the word life, but it's a distinction from the animals. Man has a soul, a spirit. We may understand that this is with a view to man serving the Lord in a special way. We see there when he has made man and he blessed him, part of that blessing was to be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over everything on the earth. Man had a God-given task to fulfill. He therefore had to be capable of that. He had to be capable of perception, to know the mind of God, to rule the earth for God. It was to serve God in God's place within the rest of this created order. I'm saying that in order to fulfill that task, he had to have the capacity to relate to God and to receive from God relating to him. I think that the making of man is one of the truly great demonstrations of God's love. Yes, the making of man. It tells us something of God's love. It tells us that God is love, as the Apostle says, and the Apostle John says. We are feeble, and it's only human words that we can use to try and express it. But to try and say it, put it like this, that there is God, three in one, full of love within himself, within the three persons of the Godhead. But yet it seems that there was even, as it were, a need, and God, because of the greatness of his love, it's like that love is just needing to burst out and to be shared and to be spread and to be poured out on something or someone else. Here he is providing himself with yet more objects of his love. And love has always been and always will be his approach to man. It's because of his love that he's made someone to whom he can show that love. And even in that purest beginning, there's more that I would like to come back to another time where that's even more remarkable. But this is truly, I think, one of the great demonstrations of God's love. That too, as it were, should be surprising. So as well as being made a spiritual being, man was also made, as the theologians put it, in Shorter Catechism, number 10, based on Colossians 3:10 and Ephesians 4:24, man was made with knowledge, righteousness, and holiness. That's what these things are saying. These verses are saying. They're saying God was, or man was created after God, following God. That this is part of being made in God's image, that he should have knowledge, righteousness, and holiness. These two are profound gifts and qualities, perfectly suitable for one who was to walk with his God. And walking with God, also to represent God in creation. So what I just want to do this evening is, with that brief sketch, to recall for you that great wonder, yes, of all creation, but especially of man's place in that creation. Is there any way that we can be indifferent to that, what it all means? We cannot treat it just as a matter of course. There are many around today who would reject the idea of God, but yet they can still be stumped when something new comes out about how we're made, what is there in the world in which we live. Perhaps not stunned quite to silence, but there's still some wonder. And there is an acknowledgement that we know so little of it all. And this is what God has done. Doesn't this stir you? Isn't this a magnificent surprise when we trace it back from where we are today? When we stop and consider where it has all come from? We do need to go about our daily lives with due decorum and so on, but through it all, will you not be prepared to wonder and to marvel, particularly at yourself, who you are, part of the human race that God has made with in such a remarkable way, in order that he might bestow love and relationship upon us. And to remember that neither we nor the earth on which we walk has any reason for being except by the creative and loving will of God. It's entirely his choice. Let us be amazed and glory in him. But another aspect of this making of man is that he is made with freedom of will. It becomes apparent as we read on through that passage that God has made this man, he's given him a task, but as it were, he's made him with a capacity to refuse it. There are many who've raised objections to this, and they often say that it can't be so, surely. You see, we have this other theological statement, which is perfectly true, that God is sovereign, and that it is his will that is done on earth. And so the question comes, in that case, how can man have a free will? This was one of the things that even such a fine man as Gresham Machen, what he had to say, the word that caught my eye was insoluble. You just can't quite match it up. The sort of picture that comes to mind is a stage magician. He's there and he does certain things and the audience just can't understand it. There are, say, two things that happen, whether it's before and after. And you wonder how they can happen together. We call them tricks. We know that there's something there. He's playing a trick. But we could also call it a method or a technique. He's following a certain pattern of actions. He knows these things. It's the untrained eye that can't see them and can't penetrate to follow all of them. Perhaps it's a very quick hand movement, for example, but he's learnt it. Just because we don't know how he's done it doesn't mean that they can't happen. And that's what I'm getting at. Now, I'm not suggesting God's a trickster by any means. He has no intention to deceive man whatsoever. But just because you and I can't see how these things match up together doesn't mean that they can't happen. Creation in itself should remind us of just how vastly superior to us he is in knowledge and ability. He can do far beyond anything that you or I could ever imagine. So God is sovereign. But God has also chosen to make man with a free will. And I'm not covering the whole theological subject there. But in this particular setting, why didn't God make man in such a way as to, let's say, virtually robotically fulfill his duties, to make sure that man did what he was made to do, to subdue the earth and have dominion over everything for God? Why didn't God make man in just that way, so that that's what he would do and no deviation? Remember what I said earlier. God made man so that he could pour out his love on him. And he was looking for a creature that would respond to that love. I firmly understand that. A creature who would live with a spiritual dimension in his life. You might try and reason it through. So far, at least, you can realize that true love must flow from someone's personal will. That's the way it is with God. That's where his love comes from. And if God is to be answered with love, man must also be made to have a will under his own direction to love God in return. Now that is following some pattern of logic, but it is based on the understanding of what love is about. It is something where it is a personal giving of self. And to do that, man needed to be made with a free will. But along with that, I think part of the huge surprise is that God's way was to place a challenge before man as well, before man's will. He did have that freedom, at that point at least. What would he do with it? And there was a test put in front of him, just one test. A test, would he obey? In which direction would he take his will? It's in that highlight of that specific test, and particularly in chapter 2:17, that makes it very clear, I believe, that he does have this freedom. There is that tree. What will you do with it, man? Perhaps it's our understanding of God as the all-knowing God, the omniscient God, that makes this all the more surprising. Didn't God know that man would disobey, is often the question. If that's so, why didn't he put a stop to it? If he wanted fellowship, true fellowship, outside of himself. Why make man free at all, if he was only going to give in to that temptation, if God knew all things? But that's just my point. I'm not trying to cover the whole issue of free will and so on tonight. My point is, this is the way that man was made. This is not the way that we might try and do it. We might try and work it all out so that these disasters don't happen. I'm saying we have a God of surprises. And this is not the end of the story by any means. This is not all that God had in his mind and his heart. But he put these things in place as he did. Not the way that we might think of them. Not our imagining. Not our thoughts. But God's thoughts. Think on these things. These surprises. The way that God has chosen to do things. My thought has been to take the next step next week, the next big surprise that follows on from this, just as it does in our own individual experiences. There are times when perhaps as children we might be very surprised by something, but as we get older we can start to anticipate things like that, or our understanding of it gets better, and so on. Well, just so it is, I think, with God. This is only the beginning, but the surprises keep coming, each one serving to enlighten us on the others. And the two things that I would begin with this evening is to say to you, consider what God has done in such a remarkable way. Something vastly different. Men still object to it. And there are discussions, not just outside the church, but within as well, struggling to understand. But will we not go and look at God and say, he is capable of the best things? We are far short of that. Let us accept what he has done that is distinctive and surprising. Yes, let me keep using that word. But if you were to say to me, fine, we've heard these things before. Man is made in the image of God. Man is made with a freedom of will. You've heard these things before, perhaps, and you say, well, so what? I would guess I would say, well, okay. But I would then come and say, but are they making a difference day by day? And if not, why not? If so, if they are making a difference, isn't it chiefly because you still have a sense of wonder over the way God works? If you don't, where is that sense of wonder? Where is that sense of thinking again and again and again on the works of God? I'm approaching them this way to, is the right saying, set us by the ear again? Get a hold of us, get a hold of our ear. Not one of these marvelous things is ours by right, and how often have we treated them that way? as a desperate need to recover a sense of wonder at all that God has done. What has he done that we should be at all? And specifically tonight, this is to tell us once again that God is God. And yes, he has done this astonishing thing, that man should be the pinnacle of his creation. We all have our due place, God as God, man as man. And to be amazed. I'm amazed that when I look at myself and my own inabilities and frailties and feebleness, insignificance, yet God has chosen to make us responsible beings. That is what it means to be made in the image of God, and as it happened with that free will. He has given us, in the first place, immense privilege, and that word is so overworked, but it is entirely appropriate here. Are we aware of those things? Will you be prepared to accept the surprises that God has done, and to know him as that God? The God who will do far beyond what you can ask or imagine. He hasn't changed. Eye hasn't seen nor ear heard what God has prepared for those who love him. But it starts here. Let's get to grips with that. That we are on a sure foundation. That's where we started. In order to go on with this God. And all of this, quite simply, because he chose to do it. Be surprised. I am. Why did he choose to make me? Why did he choose, as we will go on to look, to deliver me? Why did he choose to take me to himself in Christ Jesus? I'm surprised. God is a God of surprises, at least for us. Let's pray together.